Welcome, I'm Rose Aguilar, and this is Your Call. On today's show, we continue our series on health, chronic disease, cancer, and prevention with Dr. Michael Clapper. Dr. Clapper graduated from the University of Illinois College of Medicine back in 1972. He received training in surgery, anesthesiology, and orthopedics at the University of British Columbia Hospital in Vancouver and trained in obstetrics at the University of California Hospital in San Francisco. As Dr. Clapper's medical career progressed, he began to realize that many of the diseases his patient had, clogged arteries, high blood pressure, adult onset diabetes, and even some forms of arthritis and asthma, were made worse or caused by the high sugar, high fat, and high salt standard American diet. Back in 2019, research published in The Lancet found that an unhealthy diet is the leading risk factor for death globally and in the U.S. A poor diet is now responsible for more deaths than smoking. According to the 2010 Global Burden of Disease Report, the following risk factors were reported as the main causes associated with U.S. morbidity and mortality. Poor diet, 14%, smoking, 11%, high blood pressure, 8%, and obesity, 11%. Through his organization, Moving Medicine Forward, Dr. Michael Clapper travels the country to speak with young physicians and other healthcare professionals about the importance of diet in clinical practice and integrative medicine. He advocates for doctors to stop managing symptoms and start addressing the root cause of chronic disease. He also makes the connection between diet and the climate crisis. Dr. Michael Clapper has served as director of the Institute of Nutrition Education and Research. He served as doctor at the True North Health Center, a Santa Rosa, California-based medical clinic that specializes in improving health through a whole food plant-based diet. He was also a member of the American College of Lifestyle Medicine and the American Medical Student Association's Nutrition Task Force. Dr. Clapper currently serves on the advisory board for the Plantrition Project and the International Journal of Disease Reversal and Prevention. Hi, Dr. Clapper. Thank you so much for all of your really important work over the years, and thank you for joining us.
Oh, thank you for that lovely introduction, Rose. It's great to be with you and your audience.
Well, it's great to have you. I was watching a number of interviews you've done, and you tell the story about how in the first 10 years of your medical career, you were chasing numbers. You saw climbing body weights, blood pressure numbers, inflammatory markers, higher doses of steroids and insulin. And sadly, so many of your patients just got sicker. Can you tell us more about that?
Well, that's absolutely an appropriate introduction. I graduated, as you said, as a standard Western-trained physician, and I thought I was going to be doing emergency medicine and delivering babies and fixing fractures and doing what I thought family doctors do. But to my dismay, over the first 10 years, my patients are getting more obese, more ill. I'm getting calls from the emergency room that this patient is in with a stroke. This patient is in with a heart attack. And I felt like a failure as a physician. And I got so dismayed that I left general practice and decided to become an anesthesiologist. And I did 2 years as an anesthesia resident and found myself on the cardiovascular anesthesia service at Vancouver General Hospital. And day after day, I'm putting people to sleep and I'm watching surgeons open their chest and open their coronary arteries. And out of their heart arteries, they're pulling this yellow, greasy guck called atherosclerosis that was leading to their heart attacks and strokes, et cetera. And I have a real interest in this because my dad died of that disease. I know I've got those genes. And there are already studies in the medical journals saying that a plant-based diet will prevent and even reverse this plaque buildup in the arteries. And so I got the message and I changed my diet to one based on whole plant foods. Well, my body loved it. Within 12 weeks, a 20-pound spare tire of fat melted off my waist. My high blood pressure went to normal. My high cholesterol went to normal. My inflamed joints stopped hurting. And the light bulb really shone brightly there. Now, that you say, they say you can't unring the bell. And the bell rang really loudly for me. And I realized what I had been looking at in all those 10 years in medical school, in general practice, is from what my patients are eating and running through their bloodstream every 4 hours, the standard Western diet. A couple other events happened that really drove this realization home, to the point where I realized I didn't want to be an anesthesiologist and spend my career literally putting people to sleep. I'd rather go back to general practice, which I am a GP at heart, and help my patients wake up. And so I did, much to the dismay of my parents, when I left my anesthesia residency with 6 months to go. Do you know the money you're giving up? But it wasn't in truth for me to follow that path. And I went back to general practice. I did up a bunch of handouts for my patients. I found people in my area who could give plant-based cooking lessons. And the people who could change their diet to one based on whole plant foods experienced the same wonderful changes. Their blood pressures went down. They lost weight. Their diabetes went away. And I realized this is the real key to healing. And so after a while, I said, I wish someone had told me this in medical school. The information's available. I wish some professor, some chief resident sat me down and said, look, at an outpatient clinic, you're going to see the steady stream of patients and sitting in front of you, overweight, hypertensive, diabetic, clogged up and inflamed. And let's get real about why they're bringing these bodies to you. It's from what they are eating on a daily basis, the meat, the dairy, the oil, the sugars, the processed foods, and get them on a whole plant food-based diet, and these diseases go away. And this is the most, the reversibility of these diseases is profound in and of itself. And the fact that a plant-based diet is the key to that reversibility made it very clear to me that this is knowledge that every even medical school and medical students should understand. And I was thinking somebody should tell the medical students this. I wish I had known this in first, second, third year medical school. And the little voice on my shoulder said, how about you, doctor? Why don't you go tell the medical students? And so 4 years ago, we founded our nonprofit, Moving Medicine Forward. And I've been spending most of the last 4 years going to the nation's medical schools and giving the lecture to the young students entitled, What I Wish I Learned in Medical School About Nutrition. And the response has been really positive, and we've been doing follow-up with the doctors. And again, once you look behind the curtain, you can't pretend you don't know what's behind the curtain. And my job is to tear the curtain down for these students and say, it's the food your patients are eating. Start there before you get into their genetics and their environmental toxins. It's the frickin' food they're running through their arteries every 4 hours. Get them on a healthy diet, and you'll see the most exciting transformation in all of medicine. So that's been our message and our mission, and it's great to be able to share that with you, because I think the reaching the medical students is an acupuncture point. If we could change the doctors, my noble profession is a real bottleneck for the public changing their diet. Well, what if every doctor adopted a healthy plant-based diet for themselves and shared that at every visit with their patient? Hey, Joe, hi, Mary, how's your diet going? Are you eating more plant-based meals? It would change everything. And so that's why we're focused on the medical students. It's a place that we can really start changing societies and increase their understanding of the importance of a healthy diet.
It's really an incredible story, Dr. Clapper. When you think about the many, many years that you've been at this, and we have more information now than ever. There's a lot of misinformation out there, as you know, but sadly, we're just going in the wrong direction in this country. About 6 in 10 Americans are living with at least one chronic disease. We're talking about heart disease, cancer, stroke, Alzheimer's. 90% of the $4.5 trillion spent on healthcare in 2022 was to care for people experiencing chronic physical and mental health conditions. And then while cancer deaths are falling, which of course is fantastic, sadly, new cases are on the rise. So we've been doing a lot of shows about cancer because I sadly lost my dad to a very aggressive form of prostate cancer in early July. And, you know, I want to ask you about this, Dr. Clapper, because I think my dad is a really good example. He struggled with his weight for decades. And I would go to so many appointments with him. Not one doctor asked him how he eats. What do you eat, sir? I can see that you're overweight. Can we talk about your weight? In fact, I called his primary care doc after he passed to ask her, did you talk to my dad about this? And she said, yes, sort of. But she's also the same doc that said you can drink Diet Pepsi in moderation. So we've got a crisis here. How do you begin that conversation, Dr. Clapper, with a patient who is clearly obese and has a lot of health issues? And I always say on these shows, this is not about blame at all, because these are really tough issues. These foods are very addicting. I see it. I saw it with my dad. I see it with other loved ones. So how do you start these conversations?
Oh, my Rose, you have opened such an important issue here. And if someone asked me what's my overall feeling about my noble medical profession at this day and age, the word I would have to come up with, which I do repeatedly, it's embarrassing. It's an embarrassment that my scientifically powerful profession does not recognize this huge elephant sitting in front of them. And there's quite a number of reasons that I'm sure you're aware. Doctors are not taught about nutrition. We just blow right past it in medical school education. So we come out nutritionally ignorant. The pharmaceutical companies are there throughout all 4 years telling us that the treatment, just control these symptoms, pound down those cholesterol levels with statins, pound down those blood sugar levels with insulin, control those symptoms, manage the chronic disease, then you're doing your job. And that is so woefully inadequate and does such a disservice to everyone, society, to the patients, even to the doctors themselves. There's all the entrenched interest, the meat and dairy industry, which gives heavily to the medical schools and influences what shows up in the educational programs that are presented to the students, and to the point where you've got fast food restaurants in the lobbies of the hospitals, and the food that's sent up to the patients, to the inpatients who've just had a heart attack and a stroke, is appalling. They've just had a big heart attack, and up comes the bacon and eggs and the cheeseburgers, and you know, money has its evil hand in so much of this. Well, you gotta satisfy the patients. They'll go to a different hospital if we don't give them what they want. Mm-hmm. But, you know, it's time to strap on our big boy pants here and say, you want to heal these patients or don't you? Mm-hmm. If you do, then get real about why they are in your hospital, sir. Look at your medical residents. Most of them are overweight. The nurses at the nursing stations are overweight. There's no blame. They didn't know, their mother didn't know, my mother didn't know, your mother didn't know. And again, you got this juggernaut of the status quo of this is what Americans eat. We're a fast food nation now. And yeah, we become obese, but that's okay. You can be healthy at any weight. Well, you can't. It turns out that obesity is a state of inflammation. The fat inside the abdomen, the visceral fat that surrounds the liver and the intestines in an obese abdomen, this fat is not inert. 24 hours a day, it is pumping out chemicals called inflammatory cytokines, interleukin-1, interleukin-6, and they drive inflammation throughout the body. And inflammation, we are now understanding, is one of the main drivers of so many disease states in the body, everything from arthritis to depression and, yes, cancers. Keeping the prostate tissues in a man at a low-grade state of inflammation year after year after year opens the door to malignant change there, and in breast tissue in women, et cetera. The obesity issue And you've got to give it lots of leeway as far as the understanding, but the person knows they're obese and they're self-conscious about it, and they don't want any doctor wagging their finger, "You need to lose some weight." It's the opposite, you know. You've got to be very delicate and very appropriate. There's no emergency here. May take a few appointments. But then you ask, do you have any concerns about your weight? Just ask. And often the floodgates open with that one question. Or you can give them an article. I've just read in the medical journal, these major diseases are all made worse by the state of obesity. Let me give you this article to read, and maybe next time you come in, let's talk about it, because I have concerns for your overall health. And if you really, really want the patient to get healthier, there are sensitive ways to open the subject. And then there's the food, because people are really attached to those burgers and the chilies and the spaghetti with meatballs, etc. And that's where a dietitian or a food coach is such an important member of the team, and more of them are being paid by the insurance companies. But there's no penalty in taste or texture to make a bean chili instead of the beef chili, you know. And you can make a wonderful spaghetti with red sauce and mushrooms and pasta primavera full of vegetables instead of spaghetti with meatballs. They already like these foods. Just make that switch to a truly healthy, more plant-based one. I have colleagues who have a pot full of vegetarian chili going in there in the waiting room there, and they invite their patients waiting for a nurse appointment, take a little cup of it, and you see the reactions. Oh, that's not bad at all. Oh, I could eat that. Oh, if that's plant-based food, that's not hard to take at all. Then you can change somebody's life with a cup of bean chili there. So there's a multiple fronts that need to be approached there. The doctor needs to not only shine the light on their medical concerns, very importantly, the doctor needs to do it themselves. They need to set a good example. If the doctor comes in with a pocket full of statins and beta blockers for their own high blood pressure and high cholesterol, it doesn't set a good example for the patient. So the doctor needs to be the leader of this transitional team. But then the patient will say, "What do I do? Where do I go?" And fortunately, now there's all sorts of jumpstart programs. I give them a handout for Rochester Lifestyle Medicine, has a wonderful 15-day jumpstart. Physicians Committee for Responsible Medicine has a 21-day jumpstart. There's ways to link them up with plant-based dietitians and food coaches so they don't feel alone and abandoned there. And the food is delicious. And so we want to help them get moving there. And then you get to celebrate every appointment they come in every month. They've dropped a few pounds, their blood pressure's coming down, they're using less insulin, their joints are hurting less. They undergo this remarkable transformation that is obviously very pleasing to the patient. But even for the doctor, at the end of the day, I leave clinic seeing these wonderful transformations in my patients, and I go, "Yes, this is what medicine should really be to get people healthy." And so in my lectures to the students, my last slide is, you want to heal these patients or just manage their chronic disease? If you're going to manage a chronic disease, you'll leave medicine. You want to really heal them, then get real about their food, incorporate it into your treatment program, and you'll be the happiest doctor you know. I'm the happiest doctor I know. My patients get healthy.
Today, we are spending the hour with Dr. Michael Klopper, a graduate of the University of Illinois College of Medicine in Chicago. He has practiced acute care medicine for the past 35 years and has been focusing on health-promoting food and lifestyle choices to help reverse disease and prevent the need for hospitalization and surgery. Through his organization, Moving Medicine Forward, Dr. Clapper travels the country to speak with young physicians and other healthcare professionals about the importance of diet in clinical practice and integrative medicine. He advocates for doctors to stop managing symptoms and start addressing the root cause of chronic disease. We're just losing too many people, and so these shows and this information is so important, especially at a time when there's so much confusing information and a lot of misinformation on social media. If you have any questions for Dr. Clapper, you can give us a call at 866-798-8255, 866-798-8255. You can also email your call at kalw.org. Let's hear from a caller. Let's go to Lydia in Mountain View. Hi, Lydia. Welcome to the show.
Hi there, Rose. Thank you for having me. And thank you, doctor. I sure hope I can read this properly. I wanted to find out if you can help me with, I was kind of diagnosed with a mild to moderate aortic insufficiency, which is, of course, the hardening of, hard for the blood to get completely past the valve. And then also mild changes in the mitral and tricuspid valves, that they leak a little bit backwards. So the cardiology that I'm seeing said they were kind of inconclusive. So he now wants me to have a coronary angiogram and had said that if I need a stent, they would do that as well. Well, I'm kind of not happy with that as far as the stent is concerned. I don't mind them looking into the heart, but I'm kind of not so happy about getting a stent.
Okay, Lydia, stay on the line in case you have a follow-up. Dr. Clapper, were you able to follow that?
Yes, I was, absolutely. Okay. So Lydia's heart has been working pretty hard over the last decades. I suspect she may have had a, if she's been eating the standard Western diet, her arteries are probably a little bit stiff, and this puts a load of back pressure on the heart that has to pump extra hard against these slightly constricted arteries. And as the decades go by, the valves that keep the blood flowing in the proper direction can get a little distorted, they can calcify, and that's where she's at right now. Her aortic valves have become a bit calcified, a bit fibrotic. They're not closing completely. A little blood is flowing back into the heart. The heart is losing its pumping efficiency. So what can she do? The most important thing, again, is to adopt a diet of whole plant foods, the saturated fats, the meats and the dairy fats, etc. The processed foods, the restaurant foods are full of salt. All of this stiffens the arteries and raises the pressure. You want to make it as easy as possible for that heart to pump that blood out. And so a healthy diet makes the blood flow more easily. So certainly do that. Now, the second is to work with the doctors to see if there is any really severe compromise in the heart function. It's one thing to see a little leakage at the heart valves, but is the heart starting to fail? Is it there are signs that the heart is getting in trouble? If so, it may be necessary to do some work on the heart valves themselves. Now, when I went into medicine in the 1970s and 80s, there was no choice but to get the patient on the table and open their chest and spread their ribs open and open their heart and really start doing some sculpting or replacement of the actual cardiac valves. But science marches on. It's been so exciting to see that nowadays they can do these amazing procedures to sculpt the valves, to make them function better, to even replace them, all done from the inside via a catheter, a long skinny tube placed in a groin artery and threaded up into the heart. So there might be a catheter procedure that could fix the most severely compromised valve. So you'd want to be associated with a doctor that's associated with a high-tech medical center and see if you're a candidate for that. But hopefully a healthy diet will get your function stable enough so you won't really need to have that procedure done. But if the heart shows any sign of failing, definitely do that. Now, do the question of the stent. It's been well shown, and if you've been eating the standard Western diet, you probably have a little plaque built up in your arteries, but I don't hear symptoms of angina or that the heart is in trouble from clogging of the coronary arteries. And if that's the case, it's been well shown that putting a stent in to even a significant narrowing of the heart arteries where there is no symptoms, the person's not having angina, is of no real value to that patient's long-term survival. People die on the same days whether you stent these asymptomatic narrowings or you don't. So I would say, no, doctor, I'm not interested in a stent right now. And as Dr. Esselstyn and others have shown us, you can melt that plaque away from the inside with a healthy, low-fat, plant-based diet, and I suggest you do, because if you've got significant plaque in your coronary arteries, you've probably got some in your carotid arteries going to your brain, your renal arteries to your kidneys. It really needs to clean out the arterial system all over the body with a healthy plant-based diet and a good walk every day. So no, this is not a matter of seeing if you have any plaque and you can better stent it. No, you don't need that right now. You don't need a coronary arteriogram. That's a preoperative procedure, and there's no sign that you need an operation here. So at this point, work with the cardiologist who's focused on valve health. See if you need any catheter procedure that might help the valve function, and then get that heart as healthy as you can with a healthy diet. Just Google plaque reversal and atherosclerosis, coronary artery plaque reversal, and you'll see a number of programs from Dr. Barnard, Dr. Esselstyn, on how to melt away that plaque. It's all coming down to a healthy whole plant diet.
Well, thank you for the call, Lydia. Do you have any follow-ups? Oh, okay. Well, thank you. I hope that helped. We're getting actually a couple other questions about stents, I think because of Lydia's call. A number of questions are also coming in about cholesterol, the affordability of healthy food. So we'll get to those after a break. The other thing we'll talk with Dr. Clapper about after a break is what happens after you eat. Watching the talk that he gives to young medical students, What I Wished I Learned in Medical School About Nutrition, just made me realize once again that we don't really know that much about our bodies, about what happens after we eat. What does that food do to our bodies? So we'll talk about that after a break. Today, we are speaking with Dr. Michael Clapper. He graduated from the University of Illinois College of Medicine back in 1972. He has been at this for many, many years, and he travels the country to speak with young doctors about the importance of diet in clinical practice and integrative medicine. He wants doctors to stop managing symptoms and start addressing the root cause of chronic disease. This is your call. We'll be back after this. This is Your Call. I'm Rose Aguilar. Today, we are spending the hour with Dr. Michael Clapper. He graduated from the University of Illinois College of Medicine in 1972. And as his medical career progressed, he began to realize that many of the diseases his patients had were made worse or caused by the high sugar, high fat, and high salt standard American diet. And here we are, 6 in 10 Americans are living with at least one chronic disease. And while cancer deaths are falling in the United States, new cases are sadly on the rise, especially among young people. If you have any questions or comments for Dr. Clapper, the toll-free number is 866-798-8255. You can also email yourcall@kalw.org. Just quickly, Dr. Clapper, before we get to calls and emails, the part of your talk that I think is so fascinating is when you go over what your blood looks like after you eat a meal of either plant foods or, say, bacon and eggs, ultra-processed foods, lunch foods. Can you talk to us about what happens after we eat?
That old saying, out of sight, out of mind, maybe so, might be out of your mind. It's not out of your bloodstream. And if you eat a cheeseburger or order bacon and eggs, and an hour later I were to sneak up on you with a needle and a syringe in my hand, and when you weren't looking, I drew 5 milliliters of blood into a glass tube, let it clot, put it into a centrifuge and spin it down, and pulled that tube out, what we would see is the red clot on the bottom of the blood tube. But floating on the top, the liquid part, the serum, which should be crystal clear yellow, you can read newsprint through normal serum, after a cheeseburger or bacon and eggs, that serum in most folks is milky white. It is the fat that the people just ate. It's all the saturated fat, the triglycerides, the cholesterol, and your blood stays that fatty for a good 5 hours. And during those 5 hours, evil things are happening. The inner lining of the artery walls are getting injured, opening the door to that plaque formation. But that fat gets into the muscle cells and the liver cells, interfering with insulin receptors. So people get insulin resistant. The high fat diet is the driving cause for type 2 diabetes. It clogs up the insulin receptors. So insulin plugs in, but the body doesn't respond to let the sugar into the cells. But that's reversible disease. A low fat diet will clear out those insulin receptors. The fat interferes with blood clotting, and people fall and hit their heads. They may bleed in the skull. Keeping your blood fatty day after day is not a healthy thing to do, but that's exactly what happens. People do have bacon and eggs for breakfast, and a cheeseburger for lunch, and fried chicken for dinner, and ice cream for dessert. And most folks are keeping their blood fatty all day. The stuff never really clears out of the bloodstream. Well, you keep your blood fatty for 30 years, 40 years. You can't be shocked when the fat, you know, again, sticks in your fat stores, leading to obesity and inflammation, but also these other diseases of the arteries, of blood sugar. We are not carnivorous apes, you know. We are plant-eating hominids. Our ancient ancestors were plant-eating creatures that spent all day, like the mountain gorillas do today. They spend all day shoving leaves and fruit and vegetation in their mouths. They build these magnificent muscular bodies, but they don't develop clogged arteries. They don't develop obesity and atherosclerosis and diabetes. So we need to go back to what our anatomy really dictates that we eat, as a diet based of whole plant foods. And most of these diseases go away. It puts the power right in the patient's own food choices.
And you have seen this. For 8 years, you served as attending physician at the True North Health Center in Santa Rosa. You saw patients struggling with obesity, inflammation, type 2 diabetes. And this clinic, people live there for several weeks at a time. They would eat plant-based meals. In some cases, they would fast. And in your talks, you talk about how the changes you saw were incredible. Emily, for example, lost 100 pounds, and she reversed her angina and prediabetes in just 11 months. I mean, this is just one example of so many.
Absolutely. And the patients come to True North. We feed them a diet of, again, whole plant foods, oatmeal and fruit and seeds and et cetera for breakfast. Every lunch, every dinner has big colorful salads, hearty vegetable soups and stews, big plates of steamed green and yellow vegetables, filling entrees, no cheese burritos, no oil stir fries, and stews and soups and chilies and curries. We want them to eat all they want. Their body can handle large amounts of these whole plant foods, because you're basically filling your stomach up with fiber and water. That's what whole plant foods are. And so people get leaner. But very importantly, we do not want them to stay at True North, experience these wonderful changes, and then go home and fall right back into the dietary patterns of the fast foods and the meat and cheese and the oils and the sugars that created the changes in the first place. So while they're at True North, we give them cooking lessons. And it's not to turn them into gourmet chefs. This is basic survival, how to make rice, how to make oatmeal, how to steam vegetables, and how to make these big hearty soups and stews and curries that make a big pot full. You can freeze half of it, pour it out into freezer containers and freeze that, and then eat the rest of it over the next few days. So you only have to eat, make a big meal a couple times a week. And so we want them to go back to their homes equipped with keeping that healthy food stream going to their body meal after meal. And that's why over the subsequent 11 months, Emily and these other folks experienced these profound life-saving changes. She changed the course of her entire medical future by adopting a whole food plant-based diet. And anyone can do that. It's just again, choosing the bean chili instead of the beef chili and all that that implies.
We're speaking today with Dr. Michael Clapper about health, chronic disease, cancer, and prevention. Through his organization, Moving Medicine Forward, he travels the country to talk to young doctors and other healthcare professionals about the importance of diet in clinical practice and integrative medicine. We have a number of people on the line, so let's go next to Robert in Santa Rosa. Hi, Robert. Welcome to the show.
Hi, Rose. Thank you very much. And thank you, doctor. I'll make this quick. I have a friend who is actually a very, bright young woman in her early 30s. She's actually a consultant, a media consultant for an eating disorder clinic. And I'm calling because she's gained a significant amount of weight over the last 6 or 7 years, I guess. And obviously, as a Bay Area, somewhat maybe sport addict, fashion vanity addict myself, I'll admit, I had to ask her, is this okay or is this healthy? And she was very clear and candid about it. And she said, yeah, I believe in intuitive eating. I've read about it. I studied it. And to me, it means that my body knows what it wants. And I listen to it and I, love it, kind of go that way. I tried to follow up on that, but I couldn't quite follow it. But I know her, and she's smart, and she's sincere. She also runs, 6, 7, 10K races. She spins. She seems to be physically fit. But I think I don't know how obesity is defined, actually. So my real question is there a place where a person can appear to me, as admittedly somebody who came from a different tradition, to be overweight and yet not be unhealthy or obese? Okay, I'm kind of outing myself, and I'm not trying to say that I'm prejudiced at all. I'm actually just very concerned. All right, I'll take my answer off the air.
Thank you, Robert.
Well, very profound question. Thank you, Robert, for that. And we see this so frequently, and there's a couple factors at work there. First of all, she's relatively young, and when you're young, the body seems to be very forgiving, and we can get away with a lot of stuff. And so you feel good, and you can run a marathon, and, well, I must be healthy. But the question is, as the physician who has been watching for the last 50 years, what's really going on in this woman's arteries? What's really going on in her microbiome and her gut? What inflammatory microbes is she really feeding down there that will manifest as significant chronic disease, ulcerative colitis, diabetes, et cetera. But it may take another 10 years or 15 years. These are slow-growing diseases that she's feeding on a daily basis. And in any given moment, she feels good and no symptoms, so it must be working. But really, we're not meant to be obese animals. You don't see obese antelope and gazelles out in the wild there. And so it's easy to deceive yourself, and again, we all do it to some extent. But if you're eating, quote, delicious cheeseburgers every day, then you're going to develop a real hankering for them. And, well, that's what my body wants, and so we yield to the mouth sensation of biting into the meat with the relish and the ketchup and all this. Ooh, delicious! And we start craving that taste sensation. and say, well, that's what my body wants. But really, you know, it's an unnatural kind of diet. No one in history until the last 80 years or so have ever eaten that kind of food. So, so I'm afraid that it's a matter of time before she wakes up one morning or with autoimmune disease from her leaky gut and her joints are sore, or she's in the shower and she feels that breast lump, and the true cost of carrying this kind of pro-inflammatory diet and the subsequent weight will finally become manifest. So so I urge people, you know, someone has jumped off a building and they're falling down the skyscraper and they're getting down to the 10th floor and someone leans out the window and says, how's it going? And the person who's falling says, well, so far, so good. Well, it's kind of a similar thing in my mind. It seems to be working for me, but it's really not. That's not the body configuration we need. And I think there's a lot of people and interests out on the internet who will feed that and say, well, if you don't have any symptoms and you're doing fine, listen to your body. But again, I think we've really subverted a lot of our body's natural tendencies for healthy eating.
Well, thank you again for the call, Robert. And again, we're doing these shows with no judgment, but it's so important to talk about these issues because chronic diseases, again, the numbers are just increasing and we're just losing too many people. So thank you. I hope that helps. Let's go next to Mickey in Berkeley. Hi, Mickey.
Yeah, hi. Thank you for your program. My problem is that I have loss of taste and I have a tremendous craving for sweets. What to do?
That's a real issue, and thank you for that call. I certainly had a big craving for sweets, and I still love sweet foods. And so what to do? We have to take our, we have to educate our palate a bit. First of all, sugar is, you know, we all have this natural taste desire for sweet foods. But sugar has become an ingredient on our table and in our pantry. Should be seen for what it is. It's a flavoring. You add a teaspoon of maple syrup or honey to your tea, and it flavors it. But you don't want to eat sugar as a food. And when you eat a donut, a piece of cupcake, even you know a vegan piece of baked good, et cetera. It's you're eating a chunk of sugar. And when you eat that much sugar, your blood, the sugar courses through your bloodstream within the hour. It sticks, sugar sticks to protein all over the body. It stiffens them. It gets oxidized. It creates these molecules called advanced glycation end products that age the tissues. They are teeming with free radicals. Sugar was never meant to be eaten as a food. And so, first of all, it starts with realizing that when you walk past a bakery, that lovely aroma you're smelling, they're baking sugar in there, and they want you to come in and eat a big chunk of it. And so it starts with, nope, that's a chunk of sugar. I don't want to eat sugar as a food. So start with that, and you're going to be on your way to a healthier lifestyle. Now, however, what do you do with the craving for sweets? Well, in our refrigerator, we always have a cup, a bowl, actually, of cut-up melon chunks, cut-up mango chunks, fresh organic grapes. And so if I'm looking for something sweet, I'll pop in a few mango chunks, and I linger with it in my mouth. I make mango puree in my mouth. I really linger with it and bathe my my taste buds with it. And after a few melon chunks or mango chunks, a few grapes, okay, I got my sweet hit. And I can get on with the rest of my day. I'll throw some raisins into my salad. There's ways to, you know, to tease your taste buds without eating sugar as a food. So make that distinction. And you'll be on your road to truly healthy eating and not being a slave to our taste buds.
Thank you so much for the question, Mickey. We have an email from Carol who wants to talk about the affordability of these healthy foods. I used to teach women's health classes at community college. When we got to the topic of nutrition, over the years, I saw a pattern of more and more students who were overweight and experiencing depression. Affordability of healthy food is a huge issue when addressing diet. I taught students how to prioritize fruits and vegetables that were most important to buy organic. I also shared about more affordable fresh produce delivery companies like Imperfect Foods and Misfits Market. Students who were able to organize their lives enough to access these foods were so happy about this healthy change they were able to make. I believe eating well can positively impact our mental health along with exercise. It's one step at a time. Small changes could lead to reaching bigger goals, but accessibility is key to making healthy changes in our diets. Thank you so much for that email, Carol. Dr. Clapper, what are your thoughts on this? It's such an important topic.
What a beautiful question, and good for her. She really is working in the most important field to really educate her clients about healthy eating. Good for her. And I run into this question very frequently. Oh, it's expensive to eat this way, and my patients live in a food desert, and what do you do? But I say, hold it. Let's get real. When you sit down and look at the food that's eaten over the course of the day, the main staple foods, the ones that provide the most calories and protein that you really build your daily diet around, are cheap. Potatoes, rice, beans, lentils, these are cheap, without being any disparaging intention here. They call it peasant food for a reason. It's affordable. And you can buy a 10-pound bag or 20-pound bag of rice for less than $10. You can buy 10 pounds of lentils for less than $10. And you make these big stews and soups full of rice and beans and lentils. And as I said, you freeze half of it. You eat the rest of it over days. And so the main calories, the main staple foods you're eating, that should be bought in bulk and prepared in a pressure cooker, however you want to do it. Now, really cut down the expenses. And because you're not buying expensive cuts of meat and ice creams, et cetera, you've got some money left over to buy the organic broccoli and the organic kale and Brussels sprouts or whatever. So I'd like people to realize that, hey, in America today, food is cheap, and make these bulk purchases of the dry rice and beans and greens and fruits and veg, and I'm sorry, rice and beans and potatoes and dried grains and legumes. And there's a whole world of them to learn about. And you'll have the money to do this. And again, it's the bulk preparation of stews and soups and curries and chilies that keeps the diet interesting, lots of delicious spices to use. And you can really find that you can eat magnificently healthy on a very reasonable budget.
Well, thank you so much for that email, Carol. Let's go next to Mark in Oakland. Hi, Mark. Thanks for holding.
Hi. I'm hungry. A couple of obvious things, but I just want to check with you. Dairy, you haven't mentioned specifically why it's not good for you. And I'm a senior, and I've been told to take a statin in order to keep, which it did. My weight's way down, my blood pressure's down, but I've also got a fatty liver. That's the sum total of it. Thank you.
Thank you so much. And Dr. Clapper, we have just about 2 minutes left.
Wow, okay. If he's got a fatty liver, then he's been eating a bunch of sugar and fat in some form or another that's piled up in his liver. He really wants to get on a low-fat, plant-based diet, and that fatty liver will go away. He needs to stay on the statins for another 6, 12, 18 months while he's on a healthy, plant-based diet, and his cholesterol level will come down as well. And dairy products are... cow's milk is baby calf growth fluid. It's meant to blow a baby calf 65 pounds up into a 700-pound dairy cow within 18 months. Now, we don't need that stuff. There's plenty of protein available, plenty of healthy fats available. Look in the mirror, I tell my patients. If you've got big ears and a muzzle and whiskers, if you're a baby calf, go ahead and eat the dairy products. If you're not, there's so many delicious plant-based milks now, hemp milk, oat milk, rice milk. Use them on your cereal, and you'll wind up with healthier bodies, livers, and cholesterol levels. And let the calf have the baby calf growth fluid.
Well, I believe Mark is in his 80s. And so, Mark, we want you around as long as possible. So I hope that this advice helps, and thank you so much for listening, and thank you for calling in. That's the thing, Dr. Clapper, in our remaining minute. We want people living, people are living longer, but not healthy. Right. And then in the case of my dad, sadly, he was only 74 and was full of life, struggled for so many years with his weight, and we lost him. And it's just devastating. I mean, again, it's not like, I think about Chef AJ, who has been vegan for decades. Bless her heart, she's dealing with stage 4 cancer. So there's a lot of factors here, but Chef AJ's doctors have told her because she is so healthy, she's going to live longer. My dad's radiation doctor said, you know, I could throw the kitchen sink at your dad, but because he wasn't healthy, it was hard for the radiation and the chemo to work. So, I mean, every case is different. But we do know, Dr. Clapper, based on the science, and if you can end with this, there's so much research now about how diet is the number one killer. And the body is very forgiving, right? That's the other thing to focus on. So if you make changes today, it really does matter.
It's hard for me to improve on that statement. You touched all the bases there. Who knows? You know, 20 years ago, AJ might have been out for a bike ride and went past a diesel bus and inhaled a bunch of fumes that set off that cancer. Took 20 years for it to manifest due to a healthy diet. But we're living in a world that's full of carcinogens. You do the best you can, but you don't want to die of preventable diseases, clogged arteries and heart attacks and strokes. Those are certainly diet-based diseases. And the body, as you said, is very forgiving. Give it that whole plant food diet, and it has amazing powers to stop disease in its track and reverse it. So be a person who follows the natural law of our body, and you'll live as long, healthy life as your genetics can dictate.
Well, and what's amazing is over the past few months, you've spoken to medical students at University of Iowa, Midwestern University, Emory University, UC Berkeley, UC San Diego. This is just in the last few months, Dr. Clapper. So you are just moving fast to get this message out. In our final minute, how are students responding to this?
Oh, very positive. That to have a senior physician to stand up in front of them and say, these diseases are irreversible. A plant-based diet is the key to reversing the diseases, and you need to learn about it. And I give them the materials to do that. If people want to follow our work and if they want to help support our nonprofit work, because it takes money to go to these med schools, go to our website, movingmedforward.org, and you can read about what we're doing and how you can help. We need to change the medical students to create a new generation of nutritionally aware doctors that will finally give their patients the actual advice they need to hear to create actual true health for the rest of their lives.
You can learn more about Dr. Michael Clapper and watch one of his talks, What I Wished I Learned in Medical School About Nutrition, KALW.org, click news, and then your call. Dr. Clapper, thank you so much for your important work, and thank you for joining us. We'd love to have you back.
Thank you, Rose. It's been a pleasure and delight, and you're a great interviewer. Well done.
Thank you so much. And thank you so much for joining us. I'm Rose Aguilar. It's your call.